Okay. So you're in New York, right?
I am.
All right. Yeah,
I am
I
indeed.
saw a Palmdale caller ID or something on your phone. Is that right? Six six
Palmdale?
one. It said Palmdale.
Not me.
Anyway. Okay.
Oh, maybe the. I don't know.
Who knows? All right. So I'm recording. Well, as I said, I'm interested in how you became involved in education. What spurred that? Why?
Well, so I always either wanted to, my two dreams in life were to become a writer or a child psychologist. So, and then I ended up becoming a writer. And then after writing for 10 years for the Village Voice, my editor passed away, and I wanted to take some time off. And I was really missing children in my life, and I realized that I didn't know any children in my entire neighborhood, and that was really a bizarre realization. And so I looked into some nonprofit organizations that sent writers into schools. And so I started doing these residencies in public schools around New York City, and it just changed my life. I just connecting with the kids and working closely with them on personal works and on academic works and on fictional works. I just the bonds that we made and just watching them grow and change over a period of a semester. I within a year, I just realized I wasn't going back to journalism. So,
Wow.
yeah.
So what drives you today? I mean, now you've had some experience and so what, as you think about the next few years, what's keeping you going or what are you trying to accomplish the next few years?
So that's the next question. So remember Pytopia, so I developed a method and a method an approach to teaching and a philosophy to teaching writing. And we really feel like it has changed the lives of so many kids around us. And I guess the goal over the next 5 years is to spread this method and this way to many teachers and authors, within schools to teachers, out of schools to authors who might want to work with kids, and just to spread it as far as possible so that kids can be touched by this and be reawakened. Because so many kids right now are feeling, they describe themselves as reluctant writers, they think that they hate writing. They come to Writopia, and it's not rocket science, the way we speak to them and the way we approach them and the way we open them up. And I'm telling you, there's not a single so-called reluctant writer who hasn't come to Writopia for more than one session who then said, "I love writing." And parents, and the parents say to us, "What are you giving them? What did you feed my child? Why does he want to come back?" But it's really about loving every child. It's about deciding that you want to listen to them and connect with them and hear them and help them write the story that they want to write, help them write a paper about what they want to write about, and start from that place and then build and build and build. And as I said, it's not rocket science, but it is a method that is having tremendous impact.
So why do they come to you? I mean, what's not happening in their schools? What's behind that?
Well, so I think a lot of different things. So I will say that first of all, a lot of kids just come to us because they needed a creative outlet. Whether they go to even the best public schools or the best private schools, they don't have enough time in their schedule, and they don't have enough adults around them who either have the know-how or the interest to really approach their creative work. So we have a lot of kids who are already functioning on a very high level, but who just really wanted adults who are going to talk to them about the thing and help them, with this specific passion that they have. But then on the other side, we have a growing number. I mean, we now have I can't even we have dozens and dozens and dozens of kids who come to us as an after-school center or in the summer who would describe themselves as reluctant writers. And those kids, what's happening to them is I think they are getting really stressed out in schools because sometimes, they've either written personal narratives as assignments that the teacher, and so they're putting their heart and soul into something, and then they're getting back a marked up piece of paper, and so they feel scared. They think, "Wow, I put myself into this, and there's red all over it, and it's confusing,"
Right.
Or they don't have any creative writing, and it's a lot of expository writing, and they're having trouble following, they think of it as a chore, as something they have to learn in order to get a grade, as opposed to something that really, as their voice, their tool for empowerment. They don't realize that writing is a key way to get your thoughts heard and your ideas out to the world. But they just, rather than that, they see it as, you know, chore and something that you just have to do for a grade. So it's very stressful. So we just really take the stress off of it. There's no grading here. There's no requirements. It's, hey, what's in your mind? What are the ideas? What are the thoughts? Mm-hmm. Whether it's academic or whether it's creative, or whether it's personal. And, you know, we just start from that place and the promise that we're not grading them, and they relax and they open up. And then what parents are seeing is that they're approaching their schoolwork with a much more positive attitude. They all of a sudden see writing in school as something that has an opportunity as opposed, you know, to a punishment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's great. You know, I don't know. You know, do we change the whole entire education system and take grades out? You know, I don't know what the solution is, but I just know that this is why they're coming to us.
So would you describe that success you've had then as environment, curricular, people, you know, that you're focused on? Would you describe the success you've had as, you know, part of the environment, as you say, no grades, you know, it's more of a creative environment, or is it the people, you know, your leadership, your culture, is it the raw materials, the kids, you know, I mean, what is the essence?
So, as I don't know if you know, but our kids do win more creative writing awards than any other group of kids in the whole country, right?
Yeah.
So it's a bunch of factors. One is, the very first thing is, they come in and they see couches and laptops, mm-hmm. and they see smiling adults who are coming in, and we play writing games with them, and we do icebreakers and we do exercises. So right away, and we ask them right away after we do our initial game, what's your goal? Why are you here? What do you want to come from this workshop? So they are establishing their own goals around the circle. And each and every week, we ask the same question. What is your goal for today? So right away, they are taking ownership of their time here. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty empowering. It's just very different from how a lot of them are used to functioning in their schools.
Right.
So I would say that part of it is the environment, that it's an empowering student-directed program. So I think that's the number one key element. Then after that, we do have an absolute methodology. I mean, over the years, and I've been teaching creative writing now for 7 years, and the truth is, I have figured out, like, there's not a single child at Writopia who can say to me, I'm stuck, I don't know where to go next in a creative piece, who will leave me, you know, stunned. You know, each and every, we do have a way of helping kids figure out why they're stuck and how to get to the next place. So we do have a definitive, I don't like the word curriculum, I'll tell you that. I don't like the word curriculum, because then what curriculum is usually about the teacher, not about the students. Mm-hmm. It's saying, this is my agenda, not your agenda. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually uncomfortable with that word, but we do have tools that we apply we implement every single workshop, and every single teacher here goes through training. We have a handbook. So they are prepared to handle each and every challenge that a student brings to the table, and we know how to move everything forward, but we don't come in with an agenda. We never start with a lecture. You know, we have our values, which we love to integrate into the session organically. We have the insights and the tools and the values that we want to transmit, but we don't do it up front. It's organically integrated into the discussion.
So describe your... So let's say I bring one of my daughters in. So how much time, how frequently, you know, describe what that process looks like for a student at Writopia.
Yeah. So it's generally a 15-hour program. So sometimes it's divided into weekly sessions throughout a semester. So it's an hour and a half once a week, throughout either after school or on a weekend. We also have in the summer, those 15 hours are between Monday and Friday, so it's 3 hours a day. So kids will often sign up for, you know, one semester at a time or 1 week at a time in the summer. There are some kids who spend all year here and they have year-long memberships. we have the whole gamut. So that's the general. So it's basic, and also we do go into schools and we work with teachers and principals, and so we do that as well.
And in the 7 years you've been doing this, let's say in this organized fashion.
But so I just want to clarify, Writopia is 5 years old. I was doing it for years
okay,
previous.
So 5 years.
Yeah.
How have the students changed, or have they, during this time?
Well, I would say our very first crew were just like the most prolific kids in New York City. now we've spread across the country. And as, you know, and really one of our, since we started though, you know, we have like the longest mission in the universe, way too long for any nonprofit. But, you know, one line of our mission has always been to help kids find power in their writing. Those kids who felt powerless, to help them find their power. So thankfully, in the last 3 years especially, we've had a growing number of kids who really are coming in struggling. Now, when I say struggling, I don't mean remedial issues, because that is, we have a much smaller number of kids who are coming with actual literacy issues. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we don't turn anyone away. We're a nonprofit organization. We do have a fee structure, but it's sliding scale, pay what you can. And we have a 15% of our kids don't pay anything. So we definitely didn't start with any background with those kinds of literacy issues. So I would say we have a growing number of reluctant writers. These are kids who have a handle on, but they would be considered literate. They probably score, you know, average, you know, on the standardized tests, mm-hmm. In the writing section, you know. So I would say, you know, but now they feel empowered and they actually love it and their scores are rising.
Sure, sure.
Right. So I would say our first contingent were all like the top scorers, and now we have the middle, and really just kids who hated it. You know, now we have a growing number of kids who came in saying they hated writing who now love it. So I'd say, and you know what, the kids don't even know the difference, because after the first session, they're all excited and writing, so the teacher doesn't even know, like, who's supposed to be a reluctant writer, you know?
So it sounds like you do change your approach depending on the child's skills and interests and level. Is that correct?
Yeah. So there's only 6 kids per group, and we do that. And each workshop is run by an author who's totally trained in our method. Mm-hmm. So the whole idea is that when I say student directed, we ask each child what their goal is, and we're responding to each child's level. So let's say there's one child who's like, oh my God, there's literary tension. This child is 12, and I can't speak ages, and I'm, you know, blown away. I might suggest a few places where maybe amazing similes would really give it more power. So that student might really be working on similes that day. Another student, you know, there's really no sense of plot. Like another student, it's like we're trying to establish a character want. Mm-hmm. So we're really working on that. And they're just, you know, happy all working on their own projects. And the second half of each workshop, which means the second part of the last 45 minutes of each section, of each session, will be sharing our work with each other. And the kids will be giving feedback. I have to plug in my computer suddenly.
Okay.
Anyway. Hey, can anyone bring me a Lenovo charger? Thanks. Sorry.
No problem.
I hope you can edit. No?
I'm good.
The last 40 minutes, the kids are sharing with each other. And it's amazing because that child who's really prolific, who's really writing on a higher level, they felt such warm connections. Like, she'll give really thoughtful feedback. And what's really interesting is sometimes the adults are thinking, oh boy, you know, he's so silly and she's so serious. And, you know, are they going to connect? But they love being in each other's presence. They love, you know, the girl thinks it's like so cool and fun to have, you know, that silly boy there, you know, and she makes him feel special. Like, oh, he's in this group with this really smart girl. And, you know, so like they make each other feel good. So sometimes, of course, the groups don't work perfectly, and then we miss it. We were able to mix and match. We have 6 rooms, and we often have, you know, the same age groups in different rooms. So we do a lot, you know, the first few weeks of each semester, we do a little bit of switching around to make, you know, it's a very high touch environment.
Sure.
We're all emotionally invested in our kids, and we have the ability to be this way, so we're this way.
Great. So thinking about your experiences both professionally and then in Writopia, what does education mean in 2012 and over the next 5 to 10 years? You know, there's a lot going on, obviously, everything from virtual classes, you know, these massive online college courses to things like you're doing, you know, and then obviously we have the traditional education model. So what does it mean over the next 5 to 10 years?
So, sorry, one more time, a little more specifically.
Yeah, so thinking ahead over the next 5 to 10 years and given your education experience, what do you think being educated means, you know, learning how to write? What does it mean over the next 5 to 10 years? Is it something that still is heavy, you know, six people to a class, you know, that sort of model? Or do you think that, you know, something will change? I mean, what's your outlook on education?
I don't know how things are going to change. I wish I did know. But I can say, is this about how do I hope things change, or how do I think things are going to change?
Both. Aspiration and then the reality, yes.
Well.
What should happen?
I think some really interesting information is coming out right now out of Finland, right? Like, they just, there's been a lot of articles about the fact that they don't have any standardization when it comes to education, and everyone knows it's a very small country. You know, we can't perfectly compare it to us. But with that said, they haven't been applying any standardized tests, and they haven't done with any standardized curricula. Mm-hmm. And they just gave them like this first test in many years, and the kids have scored very high on this one standardized test, right? Mm-hmm. So I love the idea of people actually talking about that a lot, and people, really considering the ideas of all sorts of education gurus who have been saying for a long time that we should stop confusing high standards with standardization. And that while obviously there's a role for, you know, I just heard someone speak yesterday who said something really interesting about one reason why we need to standardize education to a degree is to make sure that teachers are teaching, are treating poor people and African Americans. This one teacher was saying, without standards, there were no standards when I was a kid, and no one taught me Shakespeare because they thought I didn't deserve to learn Shakespeare. So she really believes, she's a proponent of standardization, because she believes that means that it's going to ensure
there's a baseline, right.
That's just right. So if only we can understand, you know, if only we can look and assess and say, okay, we understand that there's this baseline that's needed in education, just to make sure, because even though this guy in Finland who was, you know, talking, he said, look, you know, the word accountable doesn't even exist in Finland because we don't need to be held accountable. You know, we're so ethical, you know, like, we're not going to, you know, so it was very interesting.
Yes.
So maybe we do need to be held accountable. You know, maybe we had other pathology, you know, social pathologies, whatever, you know. So anyway, if only we can look at the last 50 years and say, okay, we need some streamlining because we need to make sure that there is equality. But we can't let this streamlining, we can't let these standards undermine our goal. And what's our goal? Our goal is to inspire, instruct, and empower the next generation of writers. Mm-hmm. Children.
Children.
No, children. The next generation of Americans. So, you know, what are we doing in education if not that? Mm-hmm. If we're not, you know, just inspiring with knowledge, mm-hmm. and instructing with tools and empowering them with self-esteem, then what are we doing? Mm-hmm. You know? And so I hope that we can look around at the world and assess the last 50 years and be able to do things thoughtfully, you know? Like, sure, there's some aspects of standardization that we should keep, and there's a whole lot of it that we should not be amplifying, which unfortunately is exactly what we're doing right now.
So what, given your experience, what advice do you have for parents today?
Oof. You know, I have a 3.5-year-old and a 1.
Good. Perfect.
So I'm right there right now.
Perfect.
I guess if you, I would say to speak out, meet with your principal, tell them what you really need and want, ask your principal to create a culture of love and empathy in the school. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't have the resources to create your own school, it would be amazing if everyone could just go to their principals and demand a loving, inspiring, you know, instruction-based, knowledge-based, mm-hmm. empowering environment. I think maybe that's a way to start.
And what about for students? You know, let's say you're finishing high school, you know, what would you study today? You know, if you were 18, you know, what would you do?
What would I study in school if I was able to go back to college?
Yes.
I would actually definitely be studying fiction and playwriting. You know, I if I had Writopia as a child in my life, I was a journalist. I mean, that's a very personal, I'm giving a very personal answer, but I personally would have just been definitely focusing on creative endeavors at a much younger age.
So less of the hard stuff and more of the fun stuff, really.
I think there's a lot of hard stuff in fiction.
No, I mean, I guess when I say journal, that's what I'm thinking about. You know, the things you have to do, right, in journalism, as opposed to, you know, maybe a more creative approach. Yeah.
This is a very personal answer, just about me. So, I mean, if you're asking me what I think other people should study, that's a different answer. Is that what you're asking? I'm sorry.
No. I'll loop back to this. This is sort of my last question now. So, can you describe your education? Thinking back, how you were educated, and then thinking about, as a parent, what you might do differently, given what you know now.
Yeah. Going on the record. Things I think about every day. So, I grew up in the New York City public school system, mm-hmm. and let me think about how to answer this question. I think my parents, everyone around me made the best choices that they could make, and everyone was trying the best that they could. I didn't feel cared about. I didn't have, my parents were large, and so I didn't have personal relationships with my teachers starting in fifth grade. I did when I was younger, but then as the classes grew bigger, I didn't feel anything nurturing from them, mm-hmm. and it wasn't until I went to college that I started to develop really close relationships with my professors in graduate school. So my personal, where I am is then I ended up working in private schools for a couple of years before I started Writopia, and I really understood how schools that are philosophically driven and mission driven. Can create such a different world for kids, and so that's why I'm encouraging parents to go to the principal, because I think the principal, even of a public of any school, you know, can bring a culture to a mm-hmm. school, and so maybe that's where we should be starting, is making the power that the principal has. If the school doesn't have a mission, doesn't have a philosophy, this is the kind of then if that's not what it's based on, then the principal can bring that to the school. And I know there are some examples of that in New York City. There are some schools that are just different from other ones. And it's because there's a totally, insanely amazing principal on the top who's a little bit, intimidating and then a lot incredible.
Right.
I guess for my kids, I want them to be in a loving, nurturing environment. And I think I would have benefited tremendously from that, and I put my kids through.
Cool. Great. Well, that's what I have. Do you have anything else you want to add today, Rebecca?
No, that's good. Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. I appreciate it.